Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Judy Nathans.
And I'm Robert Winters.
Yes, sir.
And so, it is still July 20th.
It's July 20th. That's right. It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So as you were mentioning, summertime in an odd numbered year is electioneering, but it's also committee meetings in the absence of regular city council meetings.
Right, which then have a heightened interest because of it's a chance to kind of put out your
Some of what is said or done at some of these committee meetings miraculously find their way into campaign literature to show how hard candidate so and so is working on such and such a matter.
Okay.
And the big things that are kind of in the air, kind of floating right now, are that really I haven't heard a whole lot of activity on in terms of the politicking is charter changes, some of those
charter reforms, right?
The city manager search.
Right.
Honestly, I think getting too deeply into that issue doesn't help you politically right now, but we'll see.
I mean, there have been two meetings, so they're continued. It's more about the process and who they're going to hire as the search firm and all that stuff.
So anyway, that's happening.
Yeah.
One of the committee meetings, I did not tune into it, but I believe you did, which was of some interest, was
the car one.
Yeah, the one had to do with what they called car storage.
Well, it's the transportation and something committee, right?
Right. Yeah.
And Jivan is the chair of that. Yes.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so
you can often tell people's political inclinations by whether they use the word parking or car storage.
Oh yeah. Oh, right? Forget parking. Right.
It's like what I should do is I should write sort of a reader's guide or a viewer's guide to listening to city council rhetoric.
Yeah.
So you can kind of know where they're really coming from.
Well, actually they did have, and I didn't write it down. I didn't remember it. About the origin of the word even park. I think either Quentin brought it up or something, so that we're not using it correctly anyway. But anyway, go watch the committee if you want to see that. Yeah.
I think it's more like a classic example of, subvert the dominant paradigm. So what you do is you just sort of attack the language. And then by doing so, you try to, undermine the concept of something as normal, right? So, we used to think, people drive cars, they own cars, they get resident permits and do all of that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, especially people without cars, who don't want the world to be viewed that way. And I understand that.
Yeah.
But
they want, everyone should be on a bike or this or that. I think you should have choices. And I think, if I've said this before, if you want to eliminate driving around Harvard Square and close up, fine, do it.
There's good ways and bad ways of doing it. But
exactly.
I think one of the things COVID has shown us is that there are certain kinds of reconfigurations of roadways
that do not work at all.
Some work well, some don't work at all.
Not the Magazine Street one last summer.
Well, some of them, some were all for show and made
barriers,
practical improvement.
Watching the bicyclists mow you down. Who's going to walk in? I'm sorry. That was a nightmare. I'm so glad that they're not doing that again.
Yeah. So I'm all for creative adaptation of roadways and doing interesting things and all of that stuff. But I also think buses need to get through, emergency vehicles need to get through, people do need to get going where they're going to work and not.
And also we want things and there need to be deliveries. And yes, they may have to park in the bike lane because there's nowhere else to park.
You can basically engineer out all possible reasonable ways for a car to pause, to stop, to drop something off, or pick something off. And then for somebody to come out and yell and scream on See Click Fix how outraged they are because such and such a truck had no other option.
That's See Click Fix thing. I'm sorry.
If somebody's just being outrageous and doing something unnecessarily, for example, there's a perfectly good parking space, but you insist on doing something stupid anyway, I'm all for yelling and screaming about that. But you know, I've actually seen
for a couple
people
minutes,
lose their mind because an armored vehicle pulled up in front of a bank had no place to go to be close to the bank, but to be in a bike lane. And it was like, this is outrage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why doesn't the armored vehicle park that? Around the corner and then walk down the street with sacks full of money?
Oh my.
I have seen it. I have seen it on CClickFix. Yes. You know, so it's just crazy talk, you know. We need to kind of maybe get to some kind of better understanding about the gray areas of the law, or maybe make them not gray, make them
all right. So let me give you some highlights from this meeting that I took away, because there was a lot of public comment, although it was all about, although I think Heather Hoffman might have had more reasonable, aspiration versus reality were her comments, which so she was more on the mark. But the guitar shop owner, which I heard her speak at public, the other meeting, there's some plans to take away spaces along that stretch of Mass Ave, you know, that's past Porter Square, right?
Yeah, around Porter, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be tricky.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And then Bill McVinney and his partner or wife, I don't know, she does Carolyn not Ford. Own a car, right? Against subsidized parking spaces. That's what he calls those.
Right.
Suzanne Blier suggested rickshaws. I thought that was interesting. I
love it.
She said, I have a parking space and I don't drive. I walk everywhere. Well, good. Okay. So
you got to love the virtue.
But then there was another woman, Annette Osgood. I don't know who she is, but she said lack of parking is detrimental to small businesses, which...
And it depends upon the business, you know.
Exactly.
Cyclists love to say, no. If you eliminate parking, that's good for business. It's just like Animal Farm. I'm sorry.
I know.
This is just crazy talk. If you're running a cafe, maybe you're right.
Right.
If you're running a refrigerator dealership, not so correct.
Right.
Supermarkets, people need to pull up and pick up their groceries. You know?
So Joe Barr in the traffic department did do a presentation, which, and then I guess, I don't know, 37,000 residential permits have been issued in the city. Does that make sense?
I guess it
could be. Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting to me sometimes is seeing whether they're going up or going down.
Yeah.
I think there's just a lot of parts of
it's
this
going
country.
Down, actually. I think they mentioned
Yeah, metropolitan areas, a lot of younger people especially are choosing to go carless.
Right.
It's too much of a headache and they don't need it.
Right, because their jobs might be either remote or they can just get on the subway or walk to their work. But if you have a job where you really do need to go, like my daughter, she's a photographer, she needs to quit, you know. So whatever. Yeah. But I think some of the, one of the, I guess it was she then, I don't know, said if people have a parking space, they shouldn't get a residential permit. Because it lets park all over the city, which my daughter
honestly, that is like an adolescent viewpoint.
I know, really.
That basically says, the only reason why, the only place you'd ever put a car is storing it in your at your house.
Yeah.
You know, people need to also.
And some people may need to go 2 miles. They need their car to go shopping.
You know, their sister lives on the other side of town and they like to go visiting. And what, are you going to get a ticket now? Or are you going to need to ask for a visitor's permit in your own town? Just because you're
speaking of visitors permits, someone did bring up the fact that it, if someone didn't own a car, why should they pay the same as?
That's a perfectly valid.
Yeah. And also I do think they're kind of inexpensive, you know?
I don't think they could be raised. It could be raised, but trying to turn it into a moneymaker to me, I don't
know. No, it's not a question of money make. Well, if they think it's going to deter people from using a car, unless it's $1,000. No, I don't think,
you know, but people need to acknowledge the fact that the city in many respects was developed largely a lot of places without driveways. My house has no driveway.
Right.
I have no choice.
People are buying $1 million condos without driveways. That's what blows my mind.
I like to kind of razz the progressives on this one and say that, you know, I like to park on the street with my fellow residents because it's a form of sharing.
Oh, geez, Robert. Okay. Right? All right.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
tell me
I
that
don't
in the
own
winter.
The space. Why would I need to own the space?
I know.
Isn't it better to share spaces?
Yeah. frankly, okay, all right, all right. Well, you know, Alana brought up the point, although I don't know who owns six cars. She brought up some example that, you know, you pay the same for whether it's a second or a third or a fourth car.
All right, so that has been proposed at various times.
And to me, yeah, who's owning more than...
The city actually came back with a proposal a long time ago to charge a certain amount for the first one.
All right.
Next for the second, and
then
what happened accelerated up there. City council voted it down, I believe 8-0. Now, if that vote were to take place today, it would be 8-0. It would
well,
be
someone should closer. Bring it up. That's a policy order that I would support.
Yeah, somebody could bring it up, you know. But the thing is, it has also been proposed over the years to do what they do in Boston, which is to have different zones. So I would have a mid-Cambridge. My sticker would only be valid in mid-Cambridge.
Guess what? They don't pay for their permits.
And they don't pay for their permits.
So that's different.
So
Boston is so big, they're not going to give a citywide permit. I understand.
Exactly.
All right. So let's, okay. So that was that.
Anyway, so I think there are valid conversations to be had, but honestly, these city councilors are not the best people to be making these conversations because I think some of them have their minds completely in the wrong places. But there was one other one I believe you attended having to do with, it was kind of came out of nowhere for me. It was was it Health and Environment, it had to do with water, Cambridge
Water.
Oh
yeah, and did you watch that one?
I did not. I meant to do it, but I haven't seen it.
It's really good. I mean, the Health and Environment, it was basically, I'm looking at our water supply.
Right.
And it was a really good presentation by Sam Lipson.
Sam Lipson is public health. Sam Korda.
Sam Korda, Cambridge, sorry.
So he's the managing director of
he
the Cambridge
gave
Water
a presentation Department. With all the, you know, showing graphs and things. And then, but it started out with Quentin showing his rusted out solar water electric heaters that he's had to replace because the corrosiveness in Cambridge water. So that's really been... The gist of this meeting was that our water is too corrosive to solar, electric, whatever, plus coffee roasters. So we'll get into that. But anyway, that was, no, seriously, you know, it was over a half an hour of a presentation by. Right.
I'm not going to claim to have all the answers on this one, but what I will say is this.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I learned when I was on a water and sewer advisory committee a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Was that the Cambridge...
By the way, this is my Cambridge water. I find it tastes fine.
There we go. Mm-hmm. The Cambridge, the water distribution system, all the water mains were pretty aged at some point. Some of them are really old now, but they're really working
right.
well.
Yeah.
They've been, a lot of the big major ones have been relined and, you know, and work really quite well now. But some of them were so occluded that, you know, if you had a diameter like this, I saw the pipes where you couldn't even see through it.
Wow.
But somehow water was going through there to service a whole street.
Yeah.
So the pressure was terrible if there had been a fire. And,
oh, right.
You know, if you were counting on fire hydrants, that would not have been a very good outcome.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, the city of Cambridge was far ahead of most other cities and towns in rehabbing their distribution system. You know, they would commit to doing X number of miles per year and getting them up to snuff. And they did a lot of work on it, you know. So, so that was great. But one of the realities one of the things they learned was, is that if there was an older pipe that, you know, maybe some that had, you know, home mains that had, you know, the pipe that goes into your house, individual homes,
right.
Somehow homes still had lead mains. I had still had a lead pipe coming to my house up to a certain point.
But that doesn't cause the corrosiveness.
No, it doesn't cause the corrosiveness. But the thing is that if you... What they did is they would adjust the pH levels to the water the alkaline range to make sure that, because it was even a little bit acidic, it actually eat into some of that. So by adjusting the pH accordingly, it was able to prevent that type of deterioration of the interiors of the pipes. So so I always laugh a little bit when people talk about the corrosiveness because...
Well, isn't it the chloride in the system?
I don't know exactly if it's a chlorine because that's actually mandated by federal law. It's a chlorine residual.
But apparently, according to what they're saying, is that the water supply from the you know, Quabbin or whatever doesn't have this quality.
We have an elevated, not by a whole lot, but by enough to trigger a warning about sodium levels. But it's really
that's
only,
what it is. It's sodium chloride.
It's for the concern for people who have potential high blood pressure issues.
But what about coffee roasters? That's the complaint seems to be from people making coffee, businesses making coffee. I've heard this before. And then in fact, one of them said that equipment manufacturers of this equipment, when they find out that it's a Cambridge establishment, they won't guarantee the equipment.
I don't think it's chlorine, but there is a kind of something, a mineral deposit that can build up.
Right.
It's kind of whitish. You'll notice it even when I replace a boiler. Or hot water heater, you can see that. So over time, that can be a potential problem, you know. But in terms of the health quality and drinking of the water, it's actually superb water.
Apparently, but then the other thing was the PFAS. But that's an ongoing thing, which
I think they've got that under control.
Yeah, and then they also had a presentation by this guy from BU about PFAS in particular. And it's interesting what he didn't mention, because he mentioned the water treatment plants and, he didn't mention traditional compost facilities that have an issue with these because of a lot of at least previous compostable ware and stuff does have PFAS. A lot of things have PFAS in them, clothing, creams, a lot of stuff. It's not just coming through water, it's just, right. I felt the water department and Owen piped in, that's cute, stuff. And, we do have pretty good water. But then one of the public commenters, there's only like a couple, who said that he had to go out to Costco to get water.
That's silly.
Because the water tasted like baking soda. Sam Corda was saying, gee, I just drank the water. And I'm thinking, go back to Brookline then, because he's saying he moved from Brookline.
Well, here's what I'll say to that. I grew up in New York City, and New York City has some of the best drinking water in the universe.
True.
It's Croton water from upstate New York, fabulous water. If there's anything negative about New York City water, it's only because of the local plumbing within individual buildings or streets. But the water comes in, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
Right? So coming up to Boston, initially, years ago, I thought Cambridge had a little too much chlorine in it. But that was with the old treatment plant, which was dated to about 1923, the McGinnis plant.
Yeah, but now we have this all new treatment plant.
Yeah, right? And we also had the Payson Park Reservoir up at the top of the hill in Belmont, which was an open basin. So they kind of overdosed it a little bit so that it would still retain, because some of that effervesces out.
All right, so what is the big issue? Because Quabbin obviously is out in Western Mass, so it's more pristine, I guess, than where our water is coming from, right?
Right. Yeah. They still have to introduce chlorine into the Quabbin water, and they do, just as we introduce chlorine into ours, because it's a requirement for municipal water supplies.
But that's not the corrosiveness. It's not the chlorine, right?
Yeah, there are some other minerals within ours.
Okay.
Does that add to the taste? It might a little bit, But as I say, I once visited a brother of mine in Las Vegas. And they're drinking Lake Mead water. And in fact, if you go drinking
Lake Mead's running out of water. That's the other thing.
Right.
Water
right now,
in the West is like, they are so concerned, they don't have enough water. And we are complaining about taste.
But I actually found the water in some places, like in Las Vegas, unpalatable. I had to put lemon in it because I couldn't stand it.
That's interesting.
All right. So I'm aware of the notion that if you're coming from one place, the water may taste a little odd
first. Right.
But it's just not really realistic.
I forget what our
usage is on a per day basis. Once upon a time, it was over 15 million gallons a day, and then it was dropped down to considerably less.
Yeah.
But there's so much water saving equipment now. But once upon a time, the maximum safe field capacity for the Quabbin system was, I think, about 300 million gallons per day. If Cambridge's water was ever taken offline, that would have been terrible, because then we would have been completely dependent on the Quabbin system at a time.
Well, that's what Quick wants us to do. He wants us to get. I mean, he wants us to get our money for money. He says, are we just doing this because it's cheaper? But then they pointed out to him that it would be twice as much if we went on to the MWR.
It's not a marginal increase.
Plus, they are our backup, and we have redundancy, as Owen said.
And I'm going to say one other thing about redundancy. It's the one thing, the number one thing
I love
thing
that
I learned,
word. I love when Owen.
When I was on the Water and Sewer Advisory Committee, one thing I really learned was that the reason why a municipal water supply, really water supplies in general. And when Boston got Kuchicha water coming in,
right,
and then eventually, you know, Quabbin water, you know, right, many years later, you know, it was really because there had been major fires in these places. And water supplies were as much about fire protection,
absolutely,
as they are about, yeah, drinking water. In fact, right, more so.
Interesting.
So right now, Cambridge is lucky in that we have, yeah, our own water supply. We have a, right, double basin up in Basin Park to provide pressure head.
And you're going to show, right,
yes, some of that. I mean, and if our system were to suffer a breakdown for some reason, like when we went offline for the,
right,
rebuilding of the treatment plant, we have a backup of MWRA. So we, plus, have the, we had redundancy that built in.
And we had that drought for a while, a couple of, yeah, summers ago.
If anybody would like to know where the, yeah, interconnections are with MWRA, I'm more than happy to show you them. There are three, and I know exactly where they all are.
Okay, but you have photos of where.
Yeah, so I thought just to sort of speak a little bit about it, because, you know, the thing is when people, they can, yeah, talk out of their back of their heads sometimes,
just,
and they don't really understand,
I mean, to have,
where they are.
I don't,
okay,
know. I just.
So. Anyway, I'm just going to, okay, show a few images, right, here, not to obsess on it here.
This is
kind of a fraudulent picture in a sense that it makes it look like a big cascading waterfall, but it's actually just more of a brook.
Okay.
It's just that it's taken up close. But this is actually, there's a pond. It's just north of Cat Rocks Park, which is out around Weston area.
Okay.
And the Hobbs Brook flows through there.
That's one of our major.
And this is actually the, right, Hobbs Brook. And this is Cambridge's water. Two-thirds approximately, I think typically about two-thirds of the water is from Hobbs Brook and, mm-hmm, one-third from Stony Brook.
And
I
could, we're have buying that land long, around these places. That's,
they
the
do water thing, protection.
Water
up there,
protection.
But it's actually, right, one of my favorite places, and I'm more than, yeah, happy to take anybody who wants to go there out, yeah, to Cat Rocks Park to go, yeah, for walking around in the park, which actually has the Hobbs Brook running right down through the middle of it.
And you're going to show, you know, us some of this, right?
And just, okay, so people have a little sense about,
oh,
where,
yeah,
we are here.
So I think this is in the literature that they sent out.
Yeah. Right? So Fresh Pond, a lot of people think, yeah, it all just comes from Fresh Pond, but Fresh,
no,
Pond is really more of an almost, right, a penultimate final distribution reservoir.
Right. Yeah. So it's
the
of,
actual distribution, yeah, reservoir is this little basin called Payson Park Reservoir up on a hill,
okay,
in Belmont. It's,
right,
essentially our water tower.
Right.
But what the really the water flows from the Hobbs Basin,
mm-hmm,
and the Stony Brook Basin. You know, the Stony Brook Basin was first run in the late 1800s. The Hobbs was put in soon afterwards, right? But they joined together, the Hobbs and,
yeah,
the Stony Brook together, and then they flow into the Stony Brook Basin, which is out near Brandeis University.
But
and
is it
there,
subject to more runoff from roads? Because you see that
it potentially, yes. Yeah. So that's why
that's
having
why
some level of
right,
watershed protection,
right,
up in the watershed is so crucially important. And the, you know, the city, even with sometimes with Community Preservation Act funds,
mm-hmm,
actually purchases some land for watershed.
Yeah, that
protection.
Came up in a few years,
yeah,
ago, because and they talked about that, and it,
yeah,
actually makes it, yeah.
Yeah, there are some points of potential, mm-hmm, vulnerability. And
sure,
to what, and we've been really on the case for a long, long time to,
yeah,
make sure we try and keep things as safe and secure as possible. And by the way, that's not only beneficial for Cambridge, it's also beneficial for Weston, Lexington,
exactly,
Waltham, and
yeah,
you know, and Lincoln. You know, the fact that we actually have these as basically conservation lands is something they like, you know? So
I'm in DPW I trust, in the water body,
yeah,
and especially, you know, given the time when we just look out west and see what they're dealing with fires,
yeah,
and drought,
we should,
and
we
real
should be
water
thrilled.
Shortages,
we should be proud of the people who came before us.
Stop
more than 100 years ago, and established this system.
Drink the water. Is it,
yeah,
going to
but
kill you?
So people think pond, but it's really, it's a much more
there.
Elaborate system. Yes, it's a surface water supply. It's not groundwater. It's not
right.
pumped from wells. It's not like Poland
yeah.
Springs, you know,
yeah.
but the thing is we have a top-notch state-of-the-art filtration yeah. plant and treatment facility at Fresh Pond now, which does
yeah.
a great job, you know.
Just recycle all those water bottles that they're
yeah,
buying.
By the way, I'm just going to scan
yeah.
just quickly down here, just some of the
you
pictures.
Have some other photos. Yeah, that's
yeah, you know, so,
yeah.
you know, I've been getting around now that I've got a motor vehicle that I can count on lately.
Right, look at
and
that.
And I was
that
out
like
at the Hobbs Brook
of,
Basin.
Yeah, look at that.
This is the gatehouse
uh-huh.
For the Hobbs Brook Basin.
Right,
at the Cambridge
I've,
Reservoir.
I've been on that wall because I've seen that.
That's
yeah.
the one you see, you know, on the west side of Route 128 out
okay.
there. It's near
all
the Costco.
Right.
Right. Okay. There's, you know, some swans in there, some wow. other birds, you know, and you see a lot of life. It is filled to the brim right now, by the way.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because of all the rains, yeah. you know, it can recharge pretty quickly.
Well, that's
I'll kind of skip ahead. It's actually okay. out in an area, you know, close to the what we call the Lakes District. You know,
what are
which
we looking
is,
at? Wait, this says Riverside.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm just pointing out that these Riverside Park is on the Charles River. The Cambridge Water Supply, actually, just to kind of show you here.
Oh, right.
If it were to ever, this is the Stony Brook Basin.
Oh, that's
Basin,
the Stony Brook the, Basin.
This,
okay.
The one that's further to the south. And this is the Red Gatehouse of the Stony Brook Basin.
Yeah.
But what this is a photo looking up the spillway for when it, if it overtops the dam. Right now, you okay. can put in flashboards to raise and lower this. I right see. Now, it's really close to topping. If I went out there, maybe with the recent rains, it would even be flowing down.
Wow.
But if it does flow down, it cascades right into the Charles River.
I see.
Right? And that's into the in the Lakes District, which is where some of those other photos were taking up around, you know, where the Pony Trust Bridge was dedicated recently.
Oh,
right. You know, where people go boating to this day out in the Charles.
Sure.
You know, it's a sort of a great area. But, you know, I just really think that people in Cambridge should, first off, they should really learn more about their water system and
they should learn more about the infrastructure in the city and just learn about
they should
what's
really
under
do
the
that.
Streets and what's under, and, you know.
Yeah. You know, and I got to say, you know, Cat Rocks Park, you know, up off Drabington Way out there is a great, great place to go for a little walk, you know, and if somebody wants to go, I'll go. You know, because it's I enjoy
it. Robert know and he'll organize it. Okay.
I'll go. I will lead you through a walk through Cat Rocks Park in the Cambridge watershed.
Okay.
You know, so if you I encourage everybody to walk around Fresh Pond, but that's not the whole story.
Well,
how the system works, you know. Yeah. You can see the pipes, they actually ship it up to the hill, up to the Paysan Park.
Read those things that come to you every once in a while, you know.
Yeah. I mean, this is something we should be celebrating. We really can. Are there little things that could be improved here and there? Sure.
Right.
You know, and we've got a full service lab and we're working hard on it, you know. So anyway, I think it's a good system and learn more about it.
Good enough for me. I'm not picky.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess, we're winding down and our next meeting is actually right after the summer meeting, I believe.
I think that's exactly right.
And it's the first Tuesday, so that'll be interesting.
Anyway,
okay, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.